Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip.
Met up with some friends outside of town. They were headed towards the lake. I hopped into the back of a jacked up Jeep, but the wind upon my face. We got to the spot and the sun was hot. Everybody was feeling fine. So we jumped on in for a midday swim. Then we lost all track of time. It was a perfect day.
The camping experience is a distinct tradition, one that creates memories that can last a lifetime. Last year, when businesses were closed and many travel options were limited, people of North Central Wisconsin found respite in nature, visiting parks, getting out on the water, and, of course, camping in great numbers. Record numbers of people bought campers and RVs, while sales of tents and camping gear skyrocketed. Some were rediscovering their love of the great outdoors and all of the natural beauty North Central Wisconsin has to offer. But others were discovering camping for the very first time. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Today, the effects of the pandemic are finally beginning to recede and people are beginning to travel once again. But for many, summer travel will still mean finding the perfect spot to set up camp. Interest in camping shows no signs of slowing down this summer, and campgrounds are as busy as ever. But as much fun as the camping experience can be, it is not without its challenges. And even for the most experienced camper, there's always room for new ideas. Today, we welcome two guests to help you make the most of your camping experience this summer, whether you're a novice or an expert. From the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Northeast District Park Supervisor Sarah Pearson is here today. Sarah, welcome to Route 51.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Also joining us today is the owner of Wilderness Empowerment and a camping instructor with the Wisconsin Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, Tina Glynn. Tina, thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
What would you like to know about camping? Join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. You can email us, too, at route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. Tina, let's start with you. Tell us, what is the Wisconsin Becoming an Outdoors Woman program? It sounds very interesting.
It is an interesting program, and it's great for people who, especially women, who want to explore new outdoor activities that they've maybe never tried before or maybe they want to get better at. It's a super supportive and just really inspiring environment. It's all women who want to learn to love the outdoors and try new things.
So it's not just camping, right?
No, it's way more than that. I also teach wilderness survival skills at Bow, and there's kayaking, canoeing. We have both summer and winter bows. So, you know, in the winter, there's also the snowshoeing and skiing and dog sledding. There's just so many activities, archery, gun safety. I mean, I could go on and on.
Great.
We usually have at least 26 different classes that each person can take over a weekend time.
Well, thank you for sharing that. This sounds really interesting. And Sarah, I have to tell you, last year, interest in parks seemed to really pick up. Even just taking a road trip to a nearby park that normally would be deserted, there were people everywhere. So how much of a spike did you really see? I mean, when you look at the whole season.
Yeah, for 2020, our visitation, we estimate, was 25% greater than previous years. And we were closed for, our camping was closed for, we didn't open until mid-June. So it was just an incredible amount of people that we saw everywhere. And in my district, which includes properties like Rib Mountain State Park and Council Ground State Park, Copper Falls State Park, just an incredible amount of traffic. And it started early, and when the pandemics set in March, people were finding parks were where they could go to just to walk, just to get out. So, and it's continuing to even in this year, you can make a reservation reservation 11 months in advance. So we're almost booked for the entire summer already. It's just a, you know, incredible increase. If you want to make a reservation now for this season, sites are hard to come by at this point because people have, you know, just taken whatever chance they can to make the reservation and get out and camp and recreate.
So it sounds like there's, you know, that this interest is continuing. It's not something that just, you know, was a flash in the pan.
Yes, exactly. The interest is continuing, and we're just seeing, you know, new campers that have never even tried it before. And you know, I don't have the data from recreational vehicle sales, but, you know, just people buying RVs has jumped enormously over since the pandemic began, and, you know, finding all sorts of new people new to kayaking or new to camping, new to hiking, new to all the other activities that you can do in the great outdoors.
Well, Tina, your life is really centered around camping. I mean, what you do for a living is teaching people how to camp. So I have to wonder, when did you first take an interest? When did you start camping? Was it something that your family did, or how were you introduced to it?
I've been camping with my family since I was born, since I can remember anyway. So we've always loved camping, usually in tents. We had a camper for a few years when I was a kid, but I still went back to tent camping. I like the, you know, being in the rustic environment out in the wilderness, and I'm not much of a camper person, but yeah, always loved camping my whole life.
And what does Wilderness Empowerment do? When did you start that?
It started in 2018, and I just wanted to help people love the outdoors as much as I do. And it's about teaching people just the knowledge and skills to be able to do things outdoors on their own. That doesn't mean they have to do it on their own, but they can if they want to. They, you know, learn these skills, and then they feel more empowered to get outside and go do things on their own.
Sure. And Sarah, you're obviously very outdoors oriented too. What drew you to the DNR? What drew you to camping in the first place?
Well, I grew up on a farm in southern Wisconsin, and we weren't much of campers except for in the backyard with my sisters on, you know, hot summer nights like tonight. But actually, I got started with the state park system, just working summer, my college summers working at a state park, Muir Lake State Park, to be exact, checking in campers. And, you know, I decided at that point, I changed my idea of what I wanted to do with my career, just because of the love of the state park system and what we provide for not only visitors of Wisconsin, but just visitors to from all over. And that's how I started. And, you know, that was back in the 90s when I started. So yeah, it's just been my career ever since.
Well, a lot of people who are camping now are people with very little experience. Some are first timers. So I'd like to go over some of the basics. So Tina, when you're teaching a first timer how to camp, where do you start? What's the first thing that you teach them?
Usually I teach them how to properly set up a tent. That's the most important thing, I think, is having a shelter. You can get by without a campfire, and, you know, you can always buy ready to eat food. But if it's raining, you don't want to be sleeping on the ground. So usually how to properly set up a tent. And then we always go into how to build the perfect campfire so you can enjoy your, you know, camping experience sitting around the fire. And then I also like to teach different ways to cook so that people don't feel like all you can eat when you're camping is, you know, hot dogs and granola bars.
Sure. Well, Tina, I know a lot of people use campers and RVs. You're mm-hmm. a tent person for sure. What should campers look for when choosing a tent? Is there something that it makes a tent just the perfect thing, or, you know, or something that you want to avoid even?
I think tents are really specific to the person or family. If you, you know, if you have a larger family, you're going to want a bigger tent, or maybe you're better off having like three little tents or something like that. And it depends on what you want. There's doors that have, or tents that have hinged doors, and there's all kinds of features you can buy on tents, and the price range varies. So I wouldn't say there's a perfect tent, but my best advice when you're looking for a tent would be, keep in mind, if it says it's a two-person tent, you're probably going to be comfortable with one person. If it says four, maybe two people. So keep that in mind. And read reviews. If you're going to Amazon, even if you're not going to buy it from Amazon, maybe look it up on Amazon. Read the reviews, and that's where you're going to find out the pros and cons of different tents, because people will discover things they didn't realize would happen, like it leaked, or, you know, it has a rain fly, but the rain fly doesn't actually cover the windows. And there's all kinds of things that you want to look for in the reviews.
So you can really learn from other people's experience by looking at those, I would imagine.
Definitely, yes.
So when you're first setting up a tent, does the ground tarp go under the tent or on the floor of the tent? It goes under the tent, ground tarp first?
Yep, there's a ground tarp. And one thing that I noticed a lot of beginning campers often don't realize is you don't want that ground tarp under your tent. You don't want it to stick out over, okay, the, you know, out the outsides of your tent, because what that's going to do then is collect rain, and it's going to create like a pool under the floor of your tent, and it's going to start seeping up through. Even if it's waterproof, it sits there long enough, the water is going to seep in. So tuck the tarp that's under your tent in, you know, just like an inch or so underneath your tent. It's there to protect the, you know, the ground from seeping into the tent. But if you're using it like a tub, it's doing the opposite.
Well, I'll tell you, I've done that wrong. I have had that tarp outside of the tent every time I've gone. And yes, then we end up with water in the tent. So here we go. Sarah, what about you? What is something that you would look for in a tent when you're choosing something, or a hint that you'd like to give people about how to set one up?
Well, I'll give some hints. I would love for all of the campers to take Tina's class, because, you know, our sites are, you know, we generally try to build the campsites in a, you know, a level location, but that doesn't always work. So there could be a little bit of a slope to it, and you know, they might set up their tent incorrectly. I'd also you know, we see a lot of improper fire building techniques, especially campers that might use accelerant to help their fire go. And that's just an incredibly bad idea. And that could come down to just improper building of a fire. So again, would love everyone to take Tina's class in advance, so we don't have these, you know, scorched trees that might, you know, happen because accelerant was used.
Sure. We'll talk about campfires too in a little bit more detail in just a few moments. But Tina, when you're talking about advanced prep, what are some of the basic must-have tools that should be on a camper's packing list before leaving home?
I think, most importantly, like I mentioned, a shelter of some sort, a tent usually, or camper. And even though people think it's going to be warm, it could get cool at night. So make sure you bring along different layers. You don't have to have a lot of clothes, but at least, you know, remember to bring something if it cools down. Not having a type of bug spray or bug repellent of some sort can really put a damper on your camping trip. So that, and make sure that you've, you know, researched and know if the campsite has electricity or water. You may want to bring extra water if the campsite does not have water available.
All right, Tina Glynn and Sarah Pearson, our guests today on Route 51, where it's all about the camping experience. When we return, we'll hear some tips for campfires and cooking while camping, and some recommendations on some exceptional North Central Wisconsin camping locations. Your questions are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to route51@wpr.org. When calling, please allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. I'm Shereen Seymour. Stewart. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Camping under the leopard wood as the sun goes down and the fire's good, and I've managed to find myself some Riglo. And it wouldn't be the same, I know, contemplating the fire glow without my darling out here on the road. Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Sarah Pearson from the DNR is here today, along with Tina Glynn, a camping instructor and owner of Wilderness Empowerment. As we continue our discussion on camping in North Central Wisconsin, we'd love to hear your questions too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, be sure to leave enough time for our producer to answer your call. Okay, let's talk about campfires. There is nothing better than a campfire at the end of a day of camping. And Sarah, you were mentioning don't use accelerants. But I'm wondering too, how far away from tents and trees does the campfire need to be? Tina, maybe you can answer that question.
Well, I don't know if there, it really depends on the campsite. I would say keep your tent as far away from the campfire as you possibly can without going into another campsite.
Sure.
But, you know, it really depends on where they put the firing in some of the campgrounds and where you're camping. But yeah, keep it far away.
Sarah, starting a fire can be a little tricky. I mean, it's not always the easiest thing. Do you have any fire starting hacks you can share with us?
Well, so most of the state park and forest properties sell their own firewood, and it's you know, typically very dry. It comes very dry, kiln dried, so it's already dry. A number of our state parks, their local friends groups do sell some fire starting kits that are, you know, something that they've homemade, wax, and those have proven to be very helpful. I myself use some newspaper and just some small kindling. Anything that's dead and down around your site, you're welcome to use. So using that and maybe some dry leaves or things like that, and just build and always build it in the campfire ring, especially with this past spring we've had, that it's very dry out, still a little dry for early June. You want to be sure to keep it in that ring. And I, you know, a lot of people use the what they call the teepee method, just a pyramid, kind of a pyramid with stacking your logs, and you want to have that good airflow in there, and that's been successful for me.
And my son swears by Doritos as a fire starter.
I've never tried that. Those go in the mouth, not in the fire.
I agree. I'd rather eat them.
Yeah,
I would rather eat them too. What about starting a fire when it's kind of wet? Tina, is there anything that you can suggest about when you don't have that wood that's super dry and prime conditions?
Yeah, I think that's the number one question I get in my survival classes too. So, you know, you can bring things along that help. Some people consider it cheating, but they have those fire logs that you can buy at, like, you know, anywhere that sells sporting goods equipment usually have the fire logs, and those will burn even when they're wet. That'll help you get your fire started. But if you're looking for, as Sarah said, things that are down around your campsite, remember to look like under logs that may have been protected from the rain. Sometimes pine cones that are hanging kind of down, so it's not collecting water. Those are really good fire starters. And once you get a small fire started, you know, using, like Sarah said, newspaper, anything you have that's dry, start putting some logs that may be a little damp kind of around that fire. And as the fire burns, you're also drying out the damp ones. One other thing that I like to remind people of, though, is keep your firewood that you've bought, keep it dry. I always bring an extra tarp just to cover my pile of firewood at night. A lot of people forget about how much dew we get in Wisconsin, and they wake up and their wood is wet. So cover it up, bring a garbage bag or a tarp or anything to help keep your firewood dry, and you'll have more success with your campfire.
Well, if we've got the campfire going, then of course I want to toast a hot dog, or I want to make a s'more. But there are some great easy meals that you can make over a campfire too. Tina, what are some easy things you can make while you're camping so you don't have to eat that ready-to-eat food?
Well, it depends on how you want to cook. There's, you know, you can do Dutch oven cooking. You can bring a gas stove, a Coleman stove or something. You can cook directly over the campfire. There's just many, many ways to cook. But I think, you know, one of the easiest meals that I kind of go to because it's versatile is like walking tacos, bringing bags of chips. Then all you really have to do is just warm up some taco meat that you could prepare ahead at home. It's prepared, cooked, and seasoned. All you have to do is warm it up over the fire. And you can, you know, pre-measure out or chop up the ingredients for tacos. And then you bring it out, put it on the picnic table, and people can make their own depending on what they like. So that's one of my go-tos for larger groups. I also enjoy Dutch oven cooking. I'll make chicken and vegetables and just throw it in there and put the coals on and wait. It's super easy to make.
So. Yeah, it sounds like it's not as complicated as it initially feels like when you're thinking about that. What about some must-have equipment for people who are planning to cook over a campfire? You mentioned the Dutch oven, Tina. Do I need a mess kit, a cast iron skillet? What's helpful to have?
Cast iron skillets are so versatile. Don't always take a Dutch oven. Dutch ovens are heavy. So a cast iron skillet is great. You can use that over the campfire. I like to bring a tripod. They're super simple. Not all of the campgrounds have a grate over their fire pit. Some do, some don't. And some that do are not very clean. So if I am going to use that, I'll also put tinfoil over it. But the camping tripod's really nice because you can raise it or lower it over your campfire. And I know you mentioned the teepee method, Sarah. For cooking over a campfire, the log cabin method works really well too, because then you've got like a flat surface. If you don't have a tripod, you can actually put a cast iron pan right on top of the wood on the top, and it makes a nice flat surface for your pan.
Can you explain what the log cabin method is? I mean, the teepee I can envision. Is the log cabin just kind of like a building a house with Lincoln logs, or?
It is. I was just going to say it's like Lincoln logs. Okay. So, you know, put a couple of, and this is helpful too, if you have that wet firewood, you can put three pieces, you know, in line with each other on the bottom that are maybe a little damp. And then you can put some kindling on top of those. And then you put some smaller pieces the opposite direction, kind of like, you know, Lincoln logs, put them the opposite direction, and then maybe put a few more even smaller ones the opposite direction again. So you're just kind of like crisscrossing as you build up a few layers, and you can put your kindling kind of in the middle, and then it kind of dries out the wet ones on the bottom as it's getting your fire going on top. And it also makes a nice flat surface, like I said, so you can put your pan right on top there.
That's really helpful. Thank you. Tina Glynn and Sarah Pearson are our guests today on Route 51. It's all about camping. You can join us too. Call 800-780-9742 with your questions or email route51@wpr.org. So what do you recommend for making sure that food stays as cold as it needs to? I'm thinking ahead to this weekend when it's going to be 80, 90 degrees, how can we be sure that we're keeping our food safe? Sarah, what are your thoughts?
So I myself have, you know, some freezer packs that might last about 24 hours if I pack my cooler well. And then they're, you know, they're pretty melted after about 24 hours, especially in this heat. You know, if you're not remote camping, if you have access to run to the store and grab ice, that's what I would recommend. Actually, a number of our state park and forest properties have ice machines on the property, so you might not even have to leave the property. You might just be able to run up to the office and grab some ice. So those are the two tips that I have. I'm sure Tina has some more.
Sure. Tina, what do you think?
Well, in addition to what Sarah said, I also fill gallon jugs of water and freeze them because a block of ice is going to melt slower than individuals. And then I'll take a couple of my water bottles and freeze those. And by the end of the weekend, I can just drink them then. I like to get the like thin, I don't even know what you'd call them, like a water pitcher with a dispenser on it. It's a thin one though, and I like to fill that because it fits along the edge of the cooler. It doesn't take up a lot of space.
Sure, those are great tips. Sarah, some campgrounds, of course, have amenities like bathrooms and showers, and others don't. Mm-hmm. So when I camp, I still want to stay clean. So are there soaps that I can use that might not be as harmful to the environment? Is there something that you might recommend for staying clean at the campsite when you can't just run to the shower or the bathroom?
Sure. So what most people do is they just jump in the lake. We can't use soaps in designated beaches, but a lot of people just jump in the lake and, you know, wipe off, you know, let the lake water wipe off the grime and bug spray and whatnot. And for most people that works for a weekend such as like this. You know, if you do have access to the showers, you know, bring your own. There are some facilities that have the hand soaps that you can use, but you know, and if you want to stay green, there isn't one brand I recommend. There's numerous green brands that people like to use, but yeah, I would say a lot of people like the lake or river water as their cleaning mechanism and take the shower when they get home.
Sure. Sarah, I'd love to hear some recommendations on great camping locations in North Central Wisconsin. I know that's right in your region here. So what are some good ones for different types of campers?
So the largest state property that the department owns is the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest. It's in Oneida, Vilas, and Iron County. They have close to 1,000 campsites on that property. Others, Copper Falls State Park, Council Ground State Park. We have a couple of flowages, the Willow Flowage, which is down by Tomahawk, and the Turtle Flambeau Flowage up by Mercer. Those do have camping, but it's a unique type of camping. It's a boat-in camping where you can't drive to your site, you take watercraft to your site. Governor Thompson State Park and the Governor Earl Peshtigo River State Forest over in Marinette County. I'm not sure if our listeners are over there, but it's not far drive from this area. An adventure to get to is Big Bay State Park up on Madeline Island. So you're taking the ferry there. You know, all of the the properties in the northern part of the state just have, great camping in the north woods. I know coming from the southern part of the state, you see all these huge pine trees. It's just a unique feel. Amnicon Falls, Patterson State Park, it's hard to pick my favorite, but we have something for everyone. And the unique types, the boat in is something that we're seeing more use to as people are, trying to experience something different.
Sure. And Tina, you said that Willow is your favorite place.
Okay.
You had said that. And Tina, what about people that like to backpack in? Is there a specific campground? Gee, I can't talk today. A specific campground that is great for backpackers who just really want to be remote?
I don't know if there's a specific campground for that. When I backpack, I do the, wilderness camping at the remote sites, so they're not drive-in sites or anything, and it's basically a circle of rocks in the middle of the woods. That's the campsite. So the Ice Age Trail goes all through the state. There are some amazing places along the Ice Age Trail, and there's the North Country Trail. There's
some
many different places. Rock Island State Park. Yes.
Some wonderful places. And of course, the opposite of that kind of camping is something we're hearing a lot about lately, glamping. So explain for people who might not know, Tina, explain what's glamping.
Glamping is basically bringing everything you have from home to your tent.
Glamorous camping.
Yes, glamorous camping. So there's actually companies that will come and set up tents in your backyard just so you can glamp in your backyard. It's for people that want to get away, but they don't want to do any of the work and they want to feel like they're at home. So
exactly.
One easy way is, just you get the double inflatable queen size bed and, you bring your comforters and extra pillows and nightstands and lamps, you name it. Not my style of camping, but I know for some people that's the only way I'm going to get them out there.
Sure. Well, camping in a yurt looks pretty cool too, and this has become more popular. Can you explain what's the difference between a yurt and a tent, Tina?
Well, a yurt is a kind of a more permanent structure. Takes a lot of work to build, and it's more, I guess, like a cabin than a tent. Mm-hmm. And a tent, you can just put it up and put it down in a few minutes and move somewhere else. So,
Sarah, what's your experience with yurts?
Well, we do have a yurt at the Flambeau River State Forest over in winter. It's the first yurt we have within the system, brand new, opened in 2020 for a short minute and once we could. And that'll be something that people can experience this year. It's intended for the hunting season, but you can use it this time of year. But once hunting season, it's kind of restricted for hunters. But during the summer, it's open for reservations. WisconsinGoingToCamp.com.
All right, good to know. Tina Glenn and Sarah Pearson are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on camping. When we return, we'll hear some precautions you should take while camping, where to go if you'd like a little more solitude, and how to reserve the perfect campsite at a state park in Wisconsin. Your questions for our guests are welcome. Join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can send an email to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shireen Seward, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Seven islands to the highest side of the bay, across the bay, to the sunset, through the blue light of a fiery autumn haze. We went walking.
I just wanna go where the grass is green in another land, in another outside my window. I just want to feel dirt on my hand in the green, green valley of the fertile land, right outside my window, right in front of me.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Sarah Pearson from the DNR is here today, along with Tina Glynn, a camping instructor and owner of Wilderness Empowerment, as we continue our discussion on camping in North Central Wisconsin. We'd love to hear your questions, too. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When calling, be sure to allow enough time for our producer to answer your call. So, Sarah, take me through the process. If I want to reserve a campsite at a state park right now, do I call? Do I go online? Can I just show up? What do I need to do?
So all of our sites are 100% reservable. There's a few exceptions to some, like at the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest. So you do need to make a reservation. I'll give the phone number, or you can do it online or on the phone. The phone number is 1-888-947-2757. And online is wisconsin.goingtocamp.com. Wisconsin is spelled out. You can make reservations 11 months in advance, and you can make a reservation, you know, the same day. So if you were going today, you could go to our website and look for something. That is the there are, you know, if you came to a park and if there was a site available, you would be able to self-register, or some properties have a yellow phone that takes you directly to our reservation company. But it is 100% reservable. That's something we went fully in 2020 due to the pandemic, just to kind of limit that interaction with customers.
Tina, how about camping etiquette? I mean, what are some unspoken rules that new campers really need to understand and abide by?
I'm so happy you asked that question. I think one of the biggest problems is just noise. A lot of people, well, it depends on why you're camping. You know, some people go camping to party and have a few drinks and play loud music. Other people are going camping to get away from all of that noise. They want a nice, peaceful campsite. Most of the campsites have designated hours of quiet time, and people just need to learn to abide by that time and keep the noise down. There could be families with small kids. Keep that in mind. And along with the noise is barking dogs. I love dogs. I have two of them. But I would prefer that only my dogs are in my campsite. I've had neighboring campsites have their dog come over and eat my food and, you know, barking all the time. So, you know, keep the noise to a minimum so that people can enjoy the peace and quiet if that's why they're there. And the other big pet peeve of mine is pick up your trash. Do not leave trash at a campsite. Leave it as clean or better than the way you found it.
Sarah, anything to add to those? I mean, from a park standpoint?
Yes, I would. We'll start backwards with some of the things Tina mentioned. So about the trash. Yeah, the next camper doesn't want your bag of trash. So please take it to the dumpster. We do have dumpsters at our properties for that. And also, soda cans and beer cans, those don't burn. So please don't try burning those in your fire ring. You'd be amazed the number of people that do that, or throw their paper plates in the fire ring and leave it for the next camper. When it comes to pets, that is a pretty big you know, controversy among pet owners and the non-pet owners. And also, being a dog owner myself, you know, when I take Lucy, my dog, camping, she's in a different environment than her home. So she's, you know, a little stressed, a little anxious. And I think we could say that for a lot of dogs. So they might bark, but, and you just, Need to, you know, be that responsible pet owner, keep them on a leash, because yes, we, you know, they sometimes they get scared and they run away, and so they need to be leashed at all times. And as far as the noise, in the state parks and forest system, our rule is at no time should the noise be a disturbance to another person. So while you can have your radio on, it should be softly within your sight. You know, we shouldn't be hearing it 20 sites away or even 3 sites away. So just be respectful of everyone around you, and you know, treat campers how you would like to be treated.
Let's talk a little bit about wildlife safety. Let's face it, we're sharing the woods with animals like bears. So what can campers do to keep themselves safe and to keep the wildlife safe as well?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. Yes, we are in the Northwoods, so we do have bears. We do have even deer that are very tame within the parks. And just observe deer from a distance, especially this time of year when the fawns are born. Observe from a distance. Don't, just because the fawn is sleeping by itself doesn't mean mom isn't watching nearby. When it comes to bears, yes, we do have bears in the campground. They especially like to hang out around the dumpsters because to them that smells, you know, delicious. And so does a campground that smells maybe like bacon. We always recommend to keep your garbage, either if you can hang it from a tree, or I know people don't like to do this, but keep it in your vehicle because, you know, they will go through your garbage and you don't want to have to pick that up in the morning. Keeping your coolers in the vehicle. Bears are smart. They can figure out how to lift the cover or even unlock the cover. Keeping your coolers in your vehicle. And for those that may be remote camp, hanging your food, your trash from the tree. Some of our properties have even bear boxes, the metal boxes at some of these remote sites where you can lock your food in there safely.
What about pest control? Tina, what works best to keep the ticks and the mosquitoes at bay?
I like to use insect repellent with permethrin, or not permethrin, oh my gosh, I can't even think of the word now.
I actually know what you're talking about. It actually works on the black flies too. I can picture the bottle in my head.
I use permethrin on, and I like that spray.
I use permethrin for repelling ticks. It's picaridin. So bug spray with picaridin in it. I think it works a little bit better than DEET for the mosquitoes and the flies, but permethrin does work the best for ticks. And that's something that you would spray on your clothes, you know, get them damp and then dry. And then once it's dry, it's safe on your skin. You can wear your clothes all weekend camping and avoid ticks. But as far as the picaridin, Sawyer makes a good spray with it in it. And they also make a lotion if you don't like the bug sprays. They have lotions. If you're not a fan of the spray or lotions, I also love Thermacell. They make personal devices you can wear on your belt, or they make cute little lanterns you can put on the picnic table. And they have little pads that you put in them, and then it heats up in a safe way. It's not hot to the touch, but it heats up and emits an odor that repels mosquitoes for about 15 feet around that area.
Do those really work, Tina?
They do when you're sitting still. If you're going for a hike, the odor that's keeping the mosquitoes away is actually behind you as you're walking. So, yeah, sitting around the campfire, sitting at the picnic table, I always bring my Thermacell. Love them.
So what are some common camping mistakes that people make? What are some tips on how to avoid those mistakes, Tina? And I'm sure you've seen plenty of them as you're teaching new campers how to get acclimated.
Well, I mentioned one of them earlier, and that is, you know, using the ground tarp under your tent and having it outside your tent so it acts like a pool. You'll get a little bit of water in your tent. When it's raining, close the windows on your tent. I know that sounds, you know, just, you know, obvious, but a lot of people will forget that it might rain in the middle of the night and their tent floods.
Sure.
Also, look for a nice flat spot or maybe even a little slightly raised area when you're pitching a tent so that it doesn't collect water. You don't want to be camping in a pool in your campsite. Those are a couple of things to, you know, keep your tent dry. That's a very common mistake that people have, is their tent flooding. And then, as Sarah was mentioning with the food, put your food away. It's not fun to wake up in the morning and find out that raccoons have gone through your storage containers, your coolers. They are super smart. So are the bears. I've watched a raccoon pump a coffee carafe onto the table and then lick it up. They've opened my Tupperware and ate my donuts. So that really ruins your trip when you wake up and your food is all over your campsite or gone.
Oh, no kidding.
And it's also not safe for the animals. So.
Sure. Well, sleeping under the stars always sounds really great, but sometimes it can be challenging to get a good night's rest when you're camping. What are some things you can do to make sure you get a good night's rest? I mean, like what kind of mattress or sleeping equipment works the best? What do you find, Sarah?
I have a sleeping pad that I believe I got from REI, and it just inflates, and it, you know, just gives me a nice cushion that works well for me. The other thing I do is I tire myself out. I'm so tired with hiking and kayaking that I just tucker myself out. My two tips.
Sure. Tina, what about you? What's the perfect night's sleep mean for you when you're in a tent?
Well, I think it's important to find the bed that's right for you. So Sarah mentioned this, you know, inflatable sleeping pads. I use those when I'm backpacking, but if I'm like camping with my car right there, sometimes I'll bring a little bit bigger ones, like a twin size air mattress, and you can get them for like $12 at the store. They're super cheap, but they're more comfortable. I'm a side sleeper, so nice cushion. But a lot of people that I work with have a hard time getting up off the ground. You know, maybe they have bad knees, bad hips. They make amazing cots that are super comfortable. You just gotta, like I said before, read the reviews before you buy a cot. And they also make platforms for inflatable mattresses. You can get a queen size platform for an air mattress. So you can, you know, build up your bed to be whatever you need it to be so you can be comfortable. And
sure.
Don't you mentioned your pillow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't forget your pillow. Otherwise, you can stuff clothes inside of something and use that, I suppose, too. But you mentioned people with knee and hip problems. What about camping with disabilities? Sarah, what kind of options are there for people that you know, have some disabilities but still want to be able to enjoy the outdoors?
Yes, we have a number of accessible sites within our system. So these majority of them have electrical hookup. They're, you know, very flat, very close to the bathrooms with a paved path to the bathrooms. They're wildly popular, almost always occupied. And we find that disabled person, I mean, they know what they need to be able to camp, and they have all the gear but the sites that we provide, again, just have electrical hookup for the most part and are booked almost 100% of the time.
So Tina, for you, what's the most exciting thing about camping?
I love getting away from my real life and just you know, enjoying the peace and quiet, enjoying nature, and I always say the best thing is there's no clock when you're camping. You eat when you're hungry, you sleep when you're tired. You just do what you want to do and enjoy being away from your schedule and the busy work life.
And one final question, same thing for you, Sarah. What do you love the most about camping?
I can't say much more than what Tina had, just getting out into the outdoors. And I love the sleep when you're tired, eat when you want. That's a great motto. And it's just, you know, we have such great natural resources in this state, and to be able to enjoy them while we're camping and whatever else, other activities we want to do while we're camping, hike, bike, fish, swim. It's all excellent.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Tina Glenn of Wilderness Empowerment and the Wisconsin Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, and Sarah Pearson with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Special music today from Lady A, Michael Martin Murphy, Riders in the Sky, Gordon Lightfoot, Dead Horses, and John Denver. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at wpr.org/route51. Next week, tune in for great ways to make the most of farmers markets in north central Wisconsin. And in 2 weeks, we'll talk about the area's many wineries and the impact on local tourism. Until then, we're heading out of town.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to